Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 20th of August, 2021. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Selfish Pub Boss Keeps License, Blocked Gullies Were Cause of Flooding, and Petition to Save A&E Attracts 5,500 signatures. And the first item is Selfish Pub Boss Keeps License. A Winchester pub will not lose its license and the boss will stay, despite a police officer branding him lazy, selfish and incompetent. The Exchange and its designated premises supervisor Colin Clark had been under police spotlight following a rising number of public nuisance complaints. A committee that reviewed the pub's licence heard that since the hospitality industry was allowed to reopen, a sexual assault happened on the premises, as well as a fight between two groups of rugby fans. PC Brian Swallow, who called for Mr. Clark to be removed from his position, said, "I am aware that Mr. Clark has been running the pub for years, but I have no confidence in him moving forward. He is lazy, selfish and incompetent. Every pub in Winchester has incidents, but the Exchange is not in proportion with the others." PC Swallow also said that bar staff had not been trained to a high enough standard. He described an incident in which a bag of drugs were found in the toilet of the pub in Southgate Street. Staff had not been educated on how to deal with this, and there were no posters or information on drug misuse in the building, said the police constable. He added that staff had not been complying with track and trace rules. When he asked one employee to open the NHS app, it said they should have been isolating. But pub regular John Cowkins of St. Cross in Winchester told the meeting of his experiences. He said, "The Exchange is my favourite pub in the city. I've always found it to be well managed, friendly and calm place to have a drink. When there's a big match on, it does get a bit louder, but that's to be expected. I'm a pensioner, so are my friends, and we've never felt uncomfortable in the pub," continued Mr. Calking. "I've been going for 7 or 8 years under the current management, and it's always been safe and friendly. The recent incidents, which happened after months of lockdown, are not typical." Mr. Clark had been a pub manager for 21 years and previously worked at the William Walker and Alfie's. Julia Palmer of Trethowen's Solicitors, representing Mr. Clark, said that if he was to be removed from his position, his family would be forced to move from the home they have lived in for 20 years. "I don't think this represents the pub, but more the results of lockdown," she said. "Those closeted for ages wanted to get out and enjoy themselves and perhaps got carried away. This was then followed by the Euros." Councillor Mike Reid, chairman of the licensing subcommittee, concluded the meeting by reading the council's decision. He said, "We do not propose to remove Mr. Clark from his position. We accept that the football clientele and the unusual circumstances of the reopening did not help. However, antisocial incidents were on the increase prior to COVID. The council has put a number of conditions on the pub's licence. One states that at least 3 security guards must be on shift if a Southampton Football Club foot match, an FA Cup fixture or any other big game is being shown on the TV."
Blocked gullies were a cause of city flooding. The flooding, which damaged homes and businesses in Winchester last year, was due to intense rainfall, which left the city's drainage system unable to cope. But gullies in affected areas were also not cleared, a major report has found. Around 70 properties, both residential and commercial, were impacted when surface water flooding hit parts of the city centre on August the 27th. Hampshire County Council, as the lead local flood authority, has released the findings of a significant investigation. The report reveals that some of the drains in the affected areas were not cleared, and in some cases the County Council did not know where some of its flood assets were. Recommendations have now been put forward to mitigate the causes or impact of any future flooding. Summarising the cause, the report said, "The source of this flooding was surface water running off during an intense rainfall event. As a result, the highway drainage systems could not reasonably be expected to manage surface water flows associated with this event. This runoff was rapidly conveyed as high-velocity sheet flow on the public highway, which was exacerbated due to the steep topography and high degree of urbanisation and impermeable surfaces in the city. Surface water flowed through and pooled in low spots such as the Broadway and Cranworth Road, where the depth of water was sufficient to cause internal property flooding." JBA Consulting, the environmental consultants which carried out the investigation, found months after the flooding, some of the drains in the affected areas appeared to be blocked by silt. While during the flooding, gullies may have become blocked from falling debris or materials being washed into them, including soil, waste and leaves. It also discovered that HCC was not aware of the presence of some of its flood assets, which, quotes, could lead to potential issues with lack of maintenance exacerbating or causing flood issues if left unaddressed, close quotes. The council has been recommended to undertake additional mapping of highway drainage assets to ensure all locations are known. In places, install sustainable urban drainage systems, SUDS, or tree pits, rain gardens, or permeable paving to tackle the problem. The report also recommends adding extra protection directly to some houses and businesses. But the report has drawn criticism from the Liberal Democrat spokesperson for Economy, Transport and the Environment, Councillor Martin Todd. Councillor Todd said, "Climate change means we're going to have more and more of these floods, and this report shows the County Council just isn't ready. The floods last year were devastating for local residents and businesses, but at the time of the flood, the county hadn't been keeping drains and gullies clear in high-risk areas. In some cases, it didn't even know where their soakaways were. And it's still the case. I went round and checked last week, and many of the drains highlighted in the report were completely blocked. Even after reporting them and highlighting that they're in a high-risk area, they're still not being cleared. There's got to be a change." And that item is accompanied by a photograph of the floods just at the top of the Broadway, running from C&H Fabrics, now Closs and Hambling, right the way across to the other side. It really does look quite dreadful.
Petition to save cities A and E attracts 5,500 signatures. A petition to ensure Winchester does not lose its A&E department has attracted thousands of supporters. Around 5,500 have signed their name on the online campaign, which has a target of 6,000. This comes after last year's announcement that a new hospital is likely to be built near Basingstoke to serve central Hampshire. The news knocked hopes that the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Romsey Road will retain its current range of services. The online campaign, created by a user named Save Winchester, reads, The growing community of Winchester and staff do not want the accident and emergency department relocated to Basingstoke, or just outside Basingstoke, in the countryside. Most importantly, Winchester's residents strongly disagree with removal of its accident and emergency department. Winchester population is 122,000 plus, with surrounding communities, and it's ever growing and expanding. There is major concern in the growing elderly population of having the emergency department removed, with the added worry of the air ambulance service lack of funding and the time it takes for an ambulance to arrive being so long, some residents reporting up to 8 hours. It's clear that the ambulance service cannot be relied upon in life-threatening emergencies. In addition, and in contrast to Basingstoke, Winchester has many tens of thousands of tourist visits each year, and a large number of students. This combined far exceeds Basingstoke's population, and therefore requires at a minimum that a 24/7 accident department should remain. The residents hereby petition to keep the 24/7 accident and emergency department in place at a bare minimum, continues the text. Winchester has excellent bus and rail links, and we the residents believe it's in the best interest of everyone to consult the public properly and listen to what they want and need.
That concludes the headlines. Now we have the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Blunt, Kevin Brian Blunt, aged 62. Buchanan, Alan Richard Buchanan, peacefully, aged 75. Clemenson, Ken Clemenson, peacefully. Gibson, Winifred Elizabeth Gibson, peacefully, aged 75. Ingle, Kenneth Edward Ingle, after a short illness, aged 76. Christian Comment this week is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And Christian Comment comes from Nigel Hemming of Winchester Vineyard Church. How my faith grew during lockdown. I've been a believer as long as I can remember. I was brought up in a Christian home, and though my faith drifted a little in my student years, by my early 20s I had committed to a relationship with God, which has defined and sustained me throughout the ups and downs of my adult life. But like many followers of Jesus, the pandemic tested my faith more than any other season I can remember. Lockdown stopped public worship gatherings overnight, and though I was grateful for our online connections, I quickly realised just how reliant I had become on the Sunday service for a spiritual and emotional boost. Singing God's praise in a room full of people definitely lifts the spirits, but singing along at home to a small laptop speaker was a vastly different experience. On my own, away from the crowd, I really struggled to feel God, and I had to face some uncomfortable questions, such as, can I experience God's closeness at home in the same way as at church? Where do I take my worries and anxieties when we are all so isolated? How long until we get back to normal? How could I embrace this time and actually grow through the challenges? To survive, I had to find ways to connect with God despite the limitations of lockdown. Some days I found myself walking across the fields, no one else in sight, music loud in my ears and singing at the top of my voice, praising God for the wide open spaces. With so few people to share my feelings, another key strategy was to fill multiple pages of my journal with my complex and sometimes disturbing thoughts, often turning them into written prayers. I discovered again that writing can be such an effective way to process my doubts and fears. For much of lockdown, I felt like I was just about existing, constantly scanning the news, distracting myself from the day to day, and just trying to get through, while at the same time trying to embrace the journey. I was learning how to let go of my need to know when and how things would resolve. It was tough, but there was no other option. One of my most profound moments was on yet another Zoom chat, this time with my spiritual director, a wonderful lady who regularly listens to my ramblings, asks deeply insightful questions, and gently offers beautiful nuggets about how I might experience God through all that's going on. One day she said to me, "And what makes you think you have to sort yourself out before you can connect with Jesus? He is far more at home with the mess than with those who have it all together." Game changer. And I experienced an intermediate sense of peace as I remembered how Jesus' trademark is his affinity with people who don't have it all together, and that I am loved for who I am, irrespective of how I feel, all of the time. And that's from Nick Hemming, who is Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
Now we move to letters to the editor. The first letter is read by Frieda.
This letter comes from Jock MacDonald of Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester, and the heading for it is An Old Lie. Sir, it's truly great that Flick Drummond, our new MP in Winchester District, is planning to take an active local role on climate change in the run-up to November's COP26 in Glasgow, as said in the letter from Westminster Chronicle, August the 5th. But it is a pity, though understandable, that the old lie, namely that the UK is a world leader in cutting carbon emissions and tackling climate change, is repeated yet again. It is a lie because it does not take into account all the CO2 emitted because we demand to possess and use objects, whether computers, shoes or toys, created abroad in factories, whether in China, India or the USA, that depend on fossil fuels, whether unearthed in their own territories or imported from Australia, Russia or Saudi Arabia. The UK no longer has a manufacturing capability to speak of. What's more, those objects have to be transported here by sea or air, two of the most polluting forms of travel that exist. Our government, under whatever party, cannot be trusted until it acknowledges the truth, both to its own electorate and to all the other countries soon to be affected by climate change. Only once the truth is acknowledged can there be any clear thinking and negotiations. That's from Jock MacDonald.
The next letter is from David Drake and refers to the teenager in the 1940s photograph. Sir, we believe the girl in the sling in the weak Red Cross photos shown in the Chronicle on August the 12th is my wife Anne. She also appeared in a photo in a book published by the Hampshire Chronicle in 2002, Winchester the Post-War Years. Having enjoyed her time with the Red Cross, Anne trained as a nurse at the Royal Berkshire Hospital in Reading, where she eventually became a ward sister. After 10 years at the Royal Berks and looking for adventure, she joined the RAF as a nursing sister. She served at RAF hospitals in Halton, Changi, Singapore, and Rawton, Wiltshire, from where she flew around the world, bringing seriously ill and injured military personnel and their dependents back to the UK for treatment and rehabilitation. Following our marriage in 1972, Anne had to resign from the RAF and became a district nurse in Oxfordshire. In the late 1970s and 80s, Anne accompanied me on tours to Nigeria and Kuwait, where she became the nurse at the British High Commission Lagos, and subsequently the American Embassy in Kuwait. Upon our return from Kuwait, and nurse at the hospital in Sarum Road until I was once again posted overseas in 1989. She is now living hardly a mile from where the photograph in the Chronicle was taken. That's from David Drake of Lupin Gardens Week.
And this letter is headed Man of Cloth Ear, and it comes from Marvin B. Naylor. Sir, to the Reverend Name Withheld of Winchester Cathedral, who approached me late Thursday afternoon in the square. You came up to me while I was playing my guitar and providing entertainment to the good people of this town, enjoying their refreshments outside the restaurants and bars, and demanded I leave at once. Without an excuse me or even waiting until I'd finished the piece I was playing, you became aggressive and intimidating, saying I was on church property and that I was obstructing the entrance to the cathedral grounds. You are wrong on both counts. The church doesn't own the square, and people were walking by freely. I am one man sitting on a camping stool. Furthermore, the only reason why someone should be asked to leave a public space is if they are causing criminal damage. As I said, all I was doing was providing relaxing entertainment, background music. I said I'd been playing in this spot for years and that this is my job and how I earn my money. You said, I don't care, I want you to leave now. I refused, and you threatened me with the police and continued with your intimidating manner. Well, I'm on friendly terms with the local constabulary, who walk past me many times in the same spot, and not once have I been told to move on. I told you I was shocked that you, a man of the cloth, a man of God, should think it acceptable to speak to someone in the way you did, and I asked you if that's how Jesus spoke to people. You ignored me and repeatedly ordered me to leave, which you had no right to do. I was only rid of you when I said I was going to record this dialogue on my phone, at which point you made your getaway down the path to the cathedral. I was quite shaken for several minutes afterwards, yet carried on with my job for another hour, no thanks to you. I am used to being hassled by drunks or druggies, but not by respectable members of the religious community. Your behaviour, which was noted by several people, was disgusting and unacceptable, and you are an embarrassment to your calling. Love, peace and understanding is what you preach, is it not? Shame on you. And that's from Marvin B. Naylor, Green Hill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter is headed Holmes Deaths, and it's from Dr. Graham Winyard of Christchurch Road, Winchester. Sir, discussion of COVID care home deaths tends to focus on how such deaths could have been prevented. But is this the right question? The lives of many elderly residents was made lonely and miserable by cutting off contact with those they most loved in order to protect them from COVID. Residents with dementia were not allowed to see the only people they could recognise, often for months. Is this what they would have chosen for themselves? And who was really being protected? Dr. Graham Winyard.
A letter from Philip Johansson, headed Bishop Crisis. Sir, the leadership in the Church of England are quick to say that they will learn lessons after the publication of certain reports or after a challenging and distressing situation has occurred in the life of the Church. Will the same be true after the sad situation in the Diocese of Winchester? Or now that the bishop has announced his retirement, will life move on as it has before? It is a distressing time, both for the diocese and for the bishop and his family. Surely things cannot just be left with an attempt to forget them. It is all the more important when several dioceses are vacant, or shortly to be so. If there is to be a lesson learnt exercise, in the interests of transparency, which is another word often used by church leaders, may we know what the lessons are? seems to me that several important questions need to be answered in an attempt to prevent any recurrence. First, why is the bishop not to retire until next February, when he said that between now and then he will hand over his responsibilities to others? The bishop stepped down in May 2021, so does this mean that he will receive his episcopal stipend for 8 months without functioning as diocesan bishop? We are told the Bishop of Southampton is running the diocese. Second, will there be an inquiry into how the appointment was made in the first place, bearing in mind that there are those who couldn't believe that such an appointment had been made? Third, will Caroline Boddington, the Archbishop's appointments advisor, be questioned regarding the research she undertook into the bishop's background before meetings of the Crown Nominations Commission, and how much information the commission was given? Who provided references to Ms. Boddington in regard to the suitability for senior leadership? Did she approach the church army, given that he'd been principal of its college in Nairobi, or CMS, whose general secretary he was for some time? Fourth, I'm led to believe that the list of potential bishops, which is held by Ms. Boddington, comes together from names supplied to her by diocesan bishops. If this is correct, did Lord Harris, when he was Bishop of Oxford, put Canon Dakin's name, as he then was, forward, as the latter lived in the Oxford diocese? Fifth, what does this situation have to say regarding the senior leadership training course, which we are led to believe is undertaken by all diocesan bishops and those who might go on Ms. Boddington's list of potential candidates? Sixth, and finally, the time has come for a more open process in the appointment of bishops, as certainly happens in several other provinces of the Anglican Communion. Philip Johansson, Stourwood Avenue, Bournemouth.
Sculpture and climate change. This letter comes from Andrew Rutter. Sir, we should celebrate any successful new sculpture in Winchester, which has the potential to add 21st century character to its townscape, as well as adding enjoyment to the lives of children. Recently, I visited the Greta Thunberg sculpture in the dramatic entrance to the university's new teaching block in Romsey Road, where it adds meaning and character to a triangular space. It also conveys the loneliness of her inspiring teenage mission. As I was looking at it, a young mother was walking into town, pushing her daughter in a buggy. When the child saw the sculpture, she insisted on getting out and running up to touch Greta's outstretched hand. When her mother lifted her up, she had pleasure in touching eyes, nose, mouth and knees. Her mother then told me how much she, as a child, had appreciated climbing on the backs of the elephant sculpture at a West End store. Why did Winchester spend £10,000 replacing a tree with an unrecognisable sculpture with an inappropriate setting in St George's Street, when they could have provided a play animal and seats, for example near the river on the way to Winnall to the city centre, which could add daily pleasure to shopping trips? I asked the mother if she knew who the sculpture was of, and when I told her, she said approvingly, "Oh, the climate change woman." When Greta, as part of her worldwide mission to centres of power, addressed both Houses of Parliament in April 2019, she repeatedly asked if they were really listening to her urgent message, because since the UN Climate Change Conference in Paris in 2016, she had heard many warm words but had seen no action on the scale needed in African and Asian countries, who for years have experienced the effects of climate change. Let's hope this year's destructive floods in Germany and disastrous fires in Greece, Australia and the USA, politicians will take this week's 14th UN IPCC report seriously. There is not much time left before a climate tipping point will make the restriction of global warming to 1.5 degrees by 2040 impossible. This will have disastrous consequences for millions of people. And that comes from Andrew Rutter, Quaker, St. John's Road, Winchester.
Remembering a great war hero. Sir, congratulations to Pat and Max Burns for their efforts to restore the grave of Regimental Sergeant Major James Fury at the West Hill Cemetery in Winchester, as stated in the Chronicle on August the 12th. James Fury was born in 1880 and joined the army in the autumn of 1899. During the Great War, he served with the 2nd Battalion Rifle Brigade. His first gallantry award was the Military Cross, awarded to commissioned officers and warrant officers only. The medal was instituted in December 1914, and Fury was awarded his in 1916. The citation for the award was published in the London Gazette and says, "For conspicuous gallantry and good service throughout the campaign." He was awarded the Distinguished Conduct Medal later in the war, and the citation for this medal says, "For conspicuous gallantry and devotion to duty." During an attack, he went to an advanced position to encourage the men and showed a very fine example of courage by shooting many of the enemy from a dangerous and exposed position until he fell severely wounded. Even then, he continued to encourage and cheer the men. And when the enemy were reported to be advancing in mass, although wounded in the stomach, he had himself helped to his feet and saw that every man was at his post. He displayed exceptionally fine pluck and devotion to duty. This was stated clearly in the London Gazette on the 26th of January 1918. Being seriously wounded, RSM Fury was undoubtedly evacuated back to England for medical treatment. He remained in the army and was attached to the 5th Battalion Rifle Brigade at Winchester. He was still serving on his death on the 21st of July 1921, and he is listed as one of the casualties of the war in the records of the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. Mr. Fury is only one of 120 soldiers who died and were buried at West Hill Cemetery from the conflicts of 1914-1918 and 1939-1945. Many have memorials placed by the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. His medal group is in the possession of the Royal Green Jackets, in brackets Rifles, Museum in Peninsula Barracks, Winchester, and is on display in the medal room. Warrant Officer First Class James Fury's medal group, from left to right, are Military Cross, Distinguished Conduct Medal, Queen's South Africa Medal, King's South Africa Medal, 1914 Star, British War Medal, Victory Medal, Long Service and Good Conduct Medal. We will remember them. This is from Blair Southerton, volunteer researcher, the Royal Green Jackets Museum.
Michael Lupton asks, why book at tip? Sir, the government has lifted lockdown and reduced many restrictions. Why does the Hampshire County Council continue to demand that householders have to book a slot to visit the Bar End Tip? Any contact is made in the open air and therefore very safe. This is particularly annoying when Winchester City Council is reducing bin collections. And that is from Michael Lupton of Main Road, Littleton.
And now a very short letter, and it's headed Cricketing Saviour. Sir, I was pleased to notice, as England struggled against India in the Test match at Lord's, that you listed the anthem at Evensong in Winchester Cathedral on the third day of the match as "Bairstow Save Us, O Lord." Chronicle, August the 12th. And that's from Lewis Rudd of Roman Road, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Hampshire Chronicle this week is read by Frieda and will be followed by First Person, read by Daphne.
This editorial comment is highlighted: climate crisis hits home in Winchester. A report on the flash flooding that engulfed parts of the High Street, Full Flood and St Cross in Winchester last August has revealed a number of shortcomings at the County Council. They included a lack of knowledge about its drainage assets, as well as inadequate clearance of its drains, a surely obvious and basic requirement. Winchester shopkeepers at the time said they had warned the County Council that the High Street drains were not working properly. This issue of proper maintenance seems to have got worse following the credit crunch of 2008-09, when local government was hit by sharply reduced government grants. Most observant Chronicle readers will have noticed blocked drains near their own homes. The intensity of the deluge is another warning sign that the climate crisis does not just cause devastating fires in the USA and Greece, rising sea levels in the Pacific, or fatal flooding in Germany. It will affect us here too in the UK and Hampshire. Local authorities have to factor that into their practices, priorities, and budget calculations.
License to Kill from Khalid Aziz. As the good people of Plymouth pull themselves together after the tragic shooting that took the lives of five victims plus the perpetrator, understandably questions are once again being asked about the possession of firearms. I say firearms, but the authorities draw a distinction between shotguns and firearms. There are around 1.3 million legally held shotguns in the UK and around 500,000 firearms. These are rifles, as no pistols can now be legally held following the Dunblane school massacre in 1996. There are 500,000 shotgun licence holders and 150,000 with firearms certificates. Many hold both. Full disclosure, I have both. The reason why one is called a licence and the other a certificate is shrouded in the mists of time, as is why the rules surrounding firearms are so much stricter. Excuse me. One argument is that rifles can kill at great distances. A bullet from my deer rifle is still lethal over a mile, although ordinary mortals couldn't shoot accurately over more than 200 yards. Plymouth proved that shotguns can be just as deadly in the wrong hands. To date, we've had no sniper-style attacks using telescopic sights. Devon and Cornwall has the highest... excuse me again. Devon and Cornwall has the highest level of legal gun ownership in the UK. Hampshire, a relatively low level of weapons. When it comes to issuing permits, police forces are understandably nervous. In the wake of atrocities, the vast majority would favour a total ban on gun ownership. But whilst we don't have a US-style right to bear arms principle enshrined in the Constitution, the authorities rightly recognise there are legitimate reasons to own weapons, from clay and game shooting to vermin control, including the culling of deer, which are at record levels because there are no apex predators like wolves to do the job for us. I know many, often city dwellers, find the whole idea distasteful, but country people tend to understand the logic and benefit from the economics of pheasant and partridge shooting, which, among other things, keeps our dwindling number of pubs going through the winter months. And, by the way, when a motorist clips a deer and leaves it injured on the road, it's usually one of us gun owners who turns out at our own expense to put the animal out of its misery under the Humane Animal Dispatch Scheme, pioneered by Hampshire Police and copied across the country. Back to licensing. There does need to be reform because licensing rules are inconsistent. Why should there be more checks for granting a firearms certificate than a shotgun license? You have to prove that you have somewhere to legitimately shoot and ask to see written permission from the landowner. Some forces are far stricter about upgrading your firearms ticket to allow, for example, the shooting of foxes. I know, but they are vermin too. Ask anyone who keeps chickens. Plymouth proved the major issue is the mental fitness of an individual to own a gun. Your doctor has to confirm, for a fee, that you have no instability. Quite rightly, you need references, and that can be tricky for the referees. I have been rung up by the police to confirm a reference, an opportunity to air any concerns in confidence. Once I did raise a concern, but it's a tricky situation. Once you have your ticket, that's it for 5 years. Apparently there were concerns in Plymouth, but nothing was done. Do police have time to trail through social media? Would we want them to? When it comes to guns, we all have to be policemen. The police cannot do it all, and we are too quick to blame them when something goes wrong. Banning guns is unlikely and would not be the answer any more than banning knives, which in Hampshire, as across the country, do more damage than guns.
Belgorham's alternative look at the news this week comprises three items, the first of which is headed Meet Police's Newest Recruit. He's Hampshire's newest member of the police force, and he might be just the cutest too. Sherlock is a Cocker Spaniel puppy who was bought by Hampshire Constabulary using money seized during drug operations. Sherlock was named by the community via a Facebook poll. Next month, the pup will start his training with the force's dog section, where he will train to become a sniffer dog. The police say he's settled in with his host family and loves to play with his ball. Sherlock is living with Sheba, a 12-year-old German shepherd who had two litters for Thames Valley Police and now lives with the family in her retirement. His host family said Sherlock's doing very well. He learned his new name within 48 hours and is sitting like a dream. His recall is excellent even when meeting other dogs that he really wants to play with. He's learning to leave things, not great at that yet, but getting the idea. He's very sociable with other dogs and people of all ages. We're just waiting for a break in the weather so we can get into town and other places. We're very happy with him. The use of police dogs that we know today began in the 1950s, when specialist sections were formed. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Sherlock, a very sweet-looking Cocker Spaniel.
This item is headed Winchester Drivers, the Best. The most skillful drivers in the UK come from Winchester, a study suggests. In a study of more than 2,000 motorists by WeBuyAnyCar.com, drivers were asked everything from how well they drove and carried out manoeuvres to how often they give way, beep their horn, or even splash a pedestrian. With all respondents from Winchester saying they can do everything from a three-point turn to parallel parking, they find themselves with the acclaimed title. The survey found the worst drivers are from Aberdeen. Richard Evans, head of technical services at WeBuyAnyCar.com, said, "Driving skills differ across the country, and motorists' confidence in their ability changes too. But one thing motorists can have confidence in, no matter where they are, is selling their car through WeBuyAnyCar.com. With a free, no-obligation quote in less than 60 seconds online, and branches within 15 minutes of anywhere in the UK on average, it's the quickest and easiest way to sell your car." Drivers from Winchester found themselves at the top of the pile once again when it comes to bus lane driving. Not one respondent from the city had ever received a ticket for doing so. But they were the worst for running a red light, with nearly one quarter of motorists admitting to taking that risk.
That's too hot to handle. A piece of public art at Winchester Cathedral has been fenced because it has become a danger in the sunshine. Luminous Motion is a metal light sculpture that has been heating up in hot, sunny weather. The cathedral has now fenced it off to stop people getting burnt. A notice says, "The current extreme temperatures have resulted in this installation becoming very hot, particularly when exposed to direct sunlight. As a precaution, we have temporarily placed these barriers around it. Thank you for your understanding." The sculpture was erected in 2002 as part of the Winchester Light Art Project, and it was unclear if there have been similar issues in the past 19 years. It is an interactive work, with passers-by able to send text messages that alter the 500-light display. The cathedral has been asked to comment, and it's accompanied by a photograph of this sculpture, which is in stainless steel, probably, very reflective. And the interesting thing about that is that it's just inside the cathedral grounds, and the other side, in the square, I can see Mr. Naylor, who wrote the letter about playing his guitar, and he is busy playing it.
Now this week's announcements. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 20th of August 2021 at 5:59 a.m. and begins at 8:18 p.m. On Wednesday the 25th of August, it ends at 6:07 a.m. and begins at 8:07 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick.
A minute.
Now we continue with items general news, and the first one is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
Hotel apologises after barring blind woman. A hotel has apologised after a blind woman was refused entry because she was accompanied by her guide dog. Outrage was sparked when Nikki West, 50, from Romsey, was denied a table at the Potter's Heron restaurant in Anfield on August the 6th. It was the second time it had happened. She said she was met with rudeness by a member of staff in the establishment, which has received a very good rating on TripAdvisor. Eventually, Nikki and her registered assistant's dog Lily and her partner James were allowed into the restaurant, but she felt it was too late and complained to management before leaving. She said, "The incident left me feeling distressed and very tearful. We had no alternative but to leave. I was left feeling like a burden and discriminated against." When she did not receive a response to her complaint, she contacted the Romsey Advertiser. Nikki has now received an apology from Pebble Hotel's chairman Ted Kennedy, who said in a letter dated to Nikki on August the 11th, "We are truly sorry that we did not recognise you had an assistance dog with you and failed to make you welcome, and please accept my apologies for that. We have reached out to the RNIB to assist us with specific training, which we will be running for all the team, and we have also asked an external agency to review our DDA readiness and policies. We already have a DDA module, and we will be ensuring our team refresh on that too. Once again, our apologies." Pebble Hotels have told Nikki they have accepted responsibility and will now look to move forward to provide better training for staff to prevent this happening again. Ludo Merlikes, manager at the Potter's Heron, confirmed that he had been informed by Pebble Hotels they will be partnering with the Royal National Institute of Blind People to ensure staff are better trained. Nikki says she is happy with the response from Pebble Hotels, but has declined the offer of dining there again.
Mayoral opening for new Basics Bank base. Hard to say. Winchester Basics Bank officially opened its new sorting and storage base in Winnall. The Mayor, Councillor Vivian Ashwall, and the Dean, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, were in attendance at Gabar House off Winnall Valley Road. It replaces the temporary storage site at the Vineyard Church, which the Basics Bank moved into at the start of the pandemic, to accommodate the increased demand for storage and to allow for social distancing. Food and clothes hubs continue to be open for Winchester Basics Bank clients at the Vineyard Church, in addition to three other food hubs in Week, Highcliffe and Alsford, meaning food is available every day from Monday to Friday. The Gabar House site supports these hubs and allows for greater storage and larger donations to the Basics Bank. Anyone in the community requiring extra help with food and clothing should get in contact. And this item comes with a photograph of the mayor cutting the tape and the dean in the background taking a photograph of her, and they are surrounded by very large trolleys filled with green trays, which presumably will allow the donations to be handled very easily.
Navy honour for centenarian. A Winchester care home resident was given two reasons to smile on his 100th birthday. John Goodman, who celebrated the milestone on August the 12th, was presented with a certificate of appreciation by the Royal Naval Association. Stuart McLean, parade marshal of the association's Area 3, accompanied by standard bearer Richard Shenton, made the presentation at Chegfield House. As well as the certificate, association chairman Keith Ridley wrote John a personal letter on behalf of its National Council. Born in Watter in Dartmoor, Devon, where he and his family moved to Plymouth when he was 11, he attended Devonport High School. Having passed his exams, John was due to go to university to study English and French. However, with the outbreak of World War II in 1939, he joined the Royal Navy instead. He served as an officer on many ships, leaving the Royal Naval in 1971. John was bursar of St Swithin's School, Winchester, until his retirement. He also voluntarily taught chess to children in a local primary school. He has four children, 13 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and two great-great-grandchildren. John was for 10 years a resident, that's a brother, of the St Cross Almshouse and made Brother Emeritus when he moved to Tegfield House. And there are three photographs accompanying the article of John, both at St Cross and at Tegfield House, and with his Royal Naval Association companions.
Man left scene of fatal crash. A lorry driver, accused of killing a motorcyclist, claimed he drove off after the crash because he did not want to get in the way of the emergency services. Lucien Sorin Todor said he made the decision to drive away after seeing 22-year-old Jack Burgess lying in the road, as he did not want to block paramedics or police from helping him. Todor, who caused the collision after crossing double white lines to overtake a cyclist, said he did not realise he caused the crash as there were no dents or scratches on his lorry. The court heard Mr Burgess died from head injuries caused in a collision with the lorry's wheels. Todor has pleaded guilty to causing death by careless driving, but denied causing death by dangerous driving. Jurors at Winchester Crown Court were told that while travelling on the A32 at Warnford near Petersfield, Hants, Todor overtook a cyclist coming up to a bend with a restricted view. Travelling on the other side of the road was an Audi A6, a Vauxhall Zafira, and Mr. Burgess's Yamaha motorcycle. Todor's manoeuvre onto the other side of the road left the other vehicles with little space. Tom Wilkins, prosecuting, said Mr. Burgess then braked. However, he came off his motorcycle, falling to his offside when he had the Vauxhall in front of him. Todor told the jury, "When I saw the motorcyclist, he was getting help already. I could not do anything because I am not medical. So when I saw he was getting help, I was thinking the police and ambulance would come and I did not want to block them." The court heard he was on the phone when the crash happened and continued the call for the 2 minutes that he stopped before leaving Mr. Burgess from Waterlooville on the side of the road. Todor from Waterlooville himself said in a statement to the police that he would have been using Bluetooth as he had an earpiece. In the statement he said, "I heard a noise like a clap and looked in my driver's side mirror and saw someone on the ground." The statement added, "I do not believe I caused the accident. I am extremely sorry that someone has died, but I do not believe it was caused by me. If I thought I was involved in an accident, I would not have left." Todor told the court he overtook the cyclist to avoid hitting him as he popped out from nowhere as he was travelling down a road which had dark and light patches due to overhanging trees. Following his death, his family revealed the organs of Jack Burgess. Jack Burgess's organs had helped 5 other people. His sister Sophie, who works for the South Central Ambulance Service, said, "We realised that as we were saying our goodbyes, around the country, other families were coming together because their loved one was getting another chance of life." Jack was a funny, adventurous and caring person who was loved by all that knew him. The trial continues.
Smiles all round as pupils collect their GCSE grades. Winchester pupils are celebrating their successes after a tough year. Those at Henry Beaufort have made head teacher Sue Hurl extremely proud, with 81% of them achieving a grade 4 or higher in both English and maths. 1 in 5 of the soon-to-be college students achieved a grade 7 or above in the 2 subjects. "We are extremely proud of the results that our young people have achieved this year," said Ms. Hurl. "Their hard work and dedication have resulted in yet another record year for the school. This is a remarkable achievement, given the obstacles our young people have had to overcome in the last 2 years. 81% of our students have achieved a grade 4 or higher in both English and maths, with 1 in 5 of our students achieving a grade 7 or above in both subjects. We need to acknowledge what has been achieved in education this year. The remarkable resilience of young people, despite the ever-changing decisions on how GCSE results would be determined and when they would be published, combined with the dedication and sheer willpower of school professionals right across the country, who made it work for our young people. To the class of 2021, I salute you. And to my colleagues, thank you for making these superb results possible. At Perrins in Alresford, the grades were high and in line with the highest achieved by previous cohorts. Executive head teacher Steve Jones said, "This year's Year 11 cohort have always been recognised as an able group. However, we also wish to highlight how highly regarded they are as positive, resilient, engaged members of the school and wider community. The teaching and pastoral teams have really enjoyed working with them. And despite the unprecedented challenge faced this year, there have again been some exceptional individual performances across the range of GCSE subjects, which include the difficult to attain grade 9S. Pupils at the Westgate School are also celebrating their successes. Head teacher Faye Dean said, "We are delighted to announce another set of outstanding GCSE results at the Westgate School. Pupils worked incredibly hard, supported by their parents, carers, and all the adults in the school, and should be very proud of their results. We wish them the very best of luck in the next stage of their education." No photos were taken at King's School, but head teacher Dr. James Adams said, "All the staff and governors at King's School wish to express our delight at the GCSE results of our Year 11 pupils. Their commitment, tenacity and hard work has enabled them to achieve exceptional personal results despite the challenges they've faced over the last 18 months. They thoroughly deserve their achievements and the opportunities that now await them. We wish them all the best for their next steps." And there is a photograph with three young female students with beaming faces looking at the paper with their results on.
Vaccines at the cathedral. It was a sign of the times that the historic grounds of Winchester Cathedral played host to a walk-in vaccination clinic. Anyone over the age of 18 could enter there for their first or second COVID-19 jab on August the 17th. The clinic was set up by Solent NHS Trust between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Stephanie Clark, clinical lead for community vaccination, said, "To hold a walk-in vaccination pop-up at such an iconic and beautiful setting like the grounds of Winchester Cathedral is just fantastic and will be a memorable moment for many. By hosting clinics in locations that are at the heart of our communities across Hampshire, it makes it even easier for people to come and get their life-saving vaccinations." Alison Evans, Chief Operating Officer for Winchester Cathedral, added, "We are delighted that the cathedral can play a part in helping the NHS to be visible in the heart of the city, and we hope many people are able to take advantage of the opportunity. Now the cathedral facility is closed following a single-day stint, the nearest walk-in vaccination centre is Oakley Road in Southampton."
Talking bench that tells wartime stories. A bench that tells wartime stories has been unveiled in Bishop's Waltham. The Basingwell Street seating area plays recordings of two villagers who recall their experiences from the 1940s in the local area. Jean Mariner has recorded her memories of wartime in Waltham Chase, and Den Mariner of his Exton childhood in the Second World War, for oral historians at Bishop's Waltham Museum. Osborne Property Services installed the bench before it was given to the parish council by the museum. Bishop's Waltham in Bloom assisted with a makeover of the sensory garden for the big day. At the unveiling, Den passed on his memories to pupils of Bishop's Waltham Junior School. And there are two lovely photographs of this wonderful bench. It's modern, it's made of very chunky wood, and set into the back of the bench is the audio equipment. I would think you either press a button or sit in front of it and you can hear these two lovely people talking. There's a picture of them sitting on the bench in the sunshine, both with their sun hats on. And then behind them there are children from the school and the other officials who helped with the installation.
The Gurkha's Sporting Past. The Gurkha Museum summer exhibition has been unveiled and it follows a sporty theme. Kelkud and Chuddy, a history of sporting achievements in the Brigade of Gurkhas. It showcases how the group have throughout history proved themselves not only as top soldiers but natural sportsmen too. Museum director Dr. Darren Bowyer said, "For over 200 years, Gurkha soldiers recruited from Nepal have loyally served this country, many making the ultimate sacrifice. the Gurkha Museum preserves the heritage of the Brigade of Gurkhas and tells its story to the British public. With our latest exhibition, we set out to highlight the achievements and incredible sporting prowess of these soldiers, away from the battlefield and military duties. This exhibition showcases the remarkable range of sporting achievements of the Brigade of Gurkhas from history through to the modern day, and I hope visitors enjoy seeing and learning about a different side to Gurkhas and the British Army. The sporting traditions of Gurkha regiments often date back to their origins within the former British Indian Army. British officers introduced and encouraged sports such as horse polo, boxing, football, and track and field events into their units, and the natural athleticism of Gurkha soldiers became evident as they excelled across most of the sports they tried their hands at. Today, soldiers compete across an increasingly wide array of sporting disciplines and have proved competitive in most. The exhibition opened to the public on August the 9th and will run until August the 31st. Entry is free with admission to the museum. And there is a photograph of a room full of sporting trophies, and in the front there is the most colossal silver cup, but it doesn't make clear what that has actually been awarded for. Well worth a visit.
Scale of operation against A33 gypsy racing revealed. More than 750 police officers stopped horse and trap racing along the A33 near Medjool-Divar across 2 weekends this summer, new data has revealed. Of the 750 police officers, 175 were drafted in from neighbouring forces to crack down on illegal racing in the gypsy and travelling community, a Freedom of Information request has revealed. Hampshire Constabulary mounted a massive operation over 2 weekends in June after the unauthorised racing attended by more than 450 people shut the A33 near Medjool-Divar over the May Bank holiday weekend. Intelligence had shown a repeat was planned on June the 19th and 20th and 26th, 27th. Now a senior councillor has questioned whether the police should have prioritised other operations, including child exploitation and drug dealing. Councillor Andy McCormack, Labour leader on Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council, said there must have been something that went wrong with the force's intelligence. Over the first weekend of the operation, two traps were seized and 3 people hit with Section 35 dispersal orders, with no racing taking place. Additionally, police cracked down on driving offences, including one drug driver, 3 drink drivers, 1 motorist dealt with for drug offences, and 5 uninsured drivers. But on the second weekend, no arrests, disposals or seizures took place. Speaking to the Gazette, Councillor McCormack said, "This is a hell of a lot of resources and not a lot to show for it. They must have made a judgment call and thought it was a bigger thing than it was. I don't know if their intelligence was off or if they cancelled at the last minute. Taking over a public road at the last minute is quite a big deal, so I can understand why they wanted to dedicate the resources they did. I'm tempted to say that there must have been something that went wrong with the intelligence at the last minute. There's more to it." Hampshire Constabulary, defending the dedication of resources, said that the operation was community policing, pure and simple. The Freedom of Information request submitted by the Gazette revealed that 585 Hampshire officers were deployed across the 2 weekends, supplemented by 175 officers drafted from Surrey, Sussex, Kent and Thames Valley. Hampshire Constabulary was asked to detail the costs of the operation, but it responded saying the information was not held. The force revealed it had 0 complaints from members of the public from the initial decision to close the A33 on May the 1st and 2nd, a move which sparked criticism from several readers of the Gazette and its sister publications. It refused to answer a question on how many days horse and trap racing was planned until the end of the year, saying it was not in the public interest to disclose that information. After the initial disruption, Conservative candidate at the Police and Crime Commissioner elections, Donna Jones, later elected to the role, pledged that the same disruption would not happen again. Chief Superintendent Paul Bartolomeo said Hampshire Constabulary received information that the illegal racing would occur on either weekend. Based on this intelligence and lessons learned from the previous races on the A33 in May, a policing operation was organised to take any activity that may occur.
Villagers losing faith in planning officers. Residents living near a controversial meadow development are losing any remaining shreds of faith in Winchester City Council's planning team. Nick Butler continues to develop the green space in Dradfield Lane, Soberton, and is seeking retrospective planning permission for the second time. But Angus McCulloch, who lives near the site, has been lobbying the council since works began over a year ago. He says that hedgerow and habitats are being destroyed and the council is not stepping in. I think that local residents are losing any remaining shreds of faith in the planning team at Winchester City Council, which seems unwilling or unable to apply and enforce planning law and their own policies, he said. The trailer and container which had been sited there in May 2020 are still there. In June 2020, the council asserted that this development was harmful to the character and appearance of this countryside location, as is obviously correct. It's like Groundhog Day. Exactly a year after the last application seeking retrospective planning permission for the enlarged entrance, we have another application that is almost identical, but with the addition of a polytunnel. Since then, the site has been developed actively with a road built down the centre, two-metre-high closed fencing erected around much of the perimeter, mains water down the length of the site, arc lighting erected and extensive drainage works performed, all of which the council say is permitted development for agricultural purposes on the site. Mr McCulloch has formally objected to the application via the City Council website. A handful of other residents have also written in, as well as Soberton Parish Council. Other objections are appearing on the website, but I think there is a concern that objecting is a waste of time and that the council has already given the nod to this application, bypassing the democratic process and making this consultation a sham, added Mr McCulloch. Mr McCulloch also said he has contacted the council several times but is yet to receive a response.
Council warned over proposed health cuts. National health experts are warning Hampshire County Council against making cuts to health visiting and school nursing services. The council is proposing to save £6.8 million from its public health budget and cut around 47 nursing posts, 12.5% of the workforce. A public consultation ended on August the 9th. The Royal College of Midwives, the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists, SANS and the National Childbirth Trust wrote to the council outlining their concerns that the cuts will harm public health and actually add additional costs. Nursing Times reports that in their letter the group called on the council to re-examine as a matter of urgency the impact of the proposed changes on pregnant women, babies, children and their families. They warned against replacing face-to-face with digital support, stressing that this was untested and that there was not enough evidence on its effectiveness as an alternative approach. The letter said, "While we recognise the difficult decisions that Hampshire County Council faces In terms of being able to balance the budget, we ask that you re-examine as a matter of urgency the impact that the proposed changes will have on women before, during and after pregnancy and on their babies. In our view, your proposals introduce unacceptable risks which will cause preventable harm and widen inequalities. As reported, other organisations have also raised strong concerns, including the Institute of Health Visiting. Alison Morton, Executive Director of the Institute of Health Visiting, which is also part of One Voice, said, "There is no doubt whatsoever that these short-sighted plans, designed to cut costs, will cause harm and cause the council and wider society much more in the long run. Babies, young children and their families are being let down by this postcode lottery. We need to listen and do better. Savings are proposed in four areas: substance misuse treatment, stop smoking, sexual health and 0 to 19 public health nursing, which includes health visiting and school nursing." Councillor Liz Fairhurst, Executive Lead Member for Adult Services and Public Health, said, "Thank you to everyone who has given their views. The County Council's Public Health Service has worked hard to reduce its costs by improving efficiency and early intervention and prevention, thereby limiting the impact of savings on frontline service delivery. However, opportunities to further reduce costs are getting harder, and extra pressures mean that an additional £6.8 million of savings must now be found."
Historic bus to return to Winchester. One of the very first buses to run in Winchester is to return to the city once more. The 1913 Ford Model T, which had been converted by a firm in Barton Stacey in that year to use as a bus, will be on display as part of Heritage Open Days. It is understood that a service between Oslebury and Winchester was started in 1921 by a Mr. Dovey. It was typical of the motorisation of the carrier services that provided links between villages and Winchester. It ran regularly before being taken over by another operator, and from 1955 by King Alfred's Buses. The original Ford Model T still survives in a roadworthy condition, and its present owner has agreed to bring it from Buckinghamshire. On Saturday, September the 11th, it will form part of Friends of King Alfred Bus display of buses and coaches on the Cattle Market car park between 12 noon and 4 p.m. There will be a free vintage bus service from Oslebury starting at 11:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m., returning at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. using a 1950s King Alfred double decker, as well as a half hourly service between the Broadway and the Cattle Market.
Audiences back into the theatre. Chesil Theatre Winchester will be delighted to welcome audiences back into their unique performance space when Anthony Horowitz's psychological thriller Mind Game takes to the stage from September the 4th to the 11th. For two of the actors, this will be a turnaround of roles, from Shakespeare to Nearing Psycho. Marcus Whitfield and Helen Milton Symes were last seen as Theseus, Duke of Athens, and Hippolyta, Queen of the Amazons, in Chesil Theatre's recent outdoor production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. They are now cast as Dr. Farquhar, the strange head of an experimental hospital for the insane, and his assistant, Nurse Paisley. Andrew Jenks plays the seemingly unsuspecting visitor, novelist Mark Styler, but is all as it looks at first sight. Director Ros Lydiard is no stranger to psychological thrillers. She directed Sleuth by Anthony Schaffer for Chesil Theatre, which played to capacity audiences. In the current pandemic, all performances are subject to and compliant with COVID regulations. The auditorium is being reconfigured to give two completely socially distanced performances and the remainder with limited capacity. Chesil Theatre, Winchester Dramatic Society, presents six main productions a year, ranging from comedy to classics. It also runs drama workshops and readings, plus two lively youth theatre groups, as well as offering stagecraft and technical training. The company has been performing for over 150 years. Since 1966, Chesil Theatre has been the Society's permanent home, a former 12th century church in Chesil Street.
15 girls clinch regional title. Hursley Park under 15 girls cricket team won a tense, low-scoring encounter against Exeter to clinch the Southwestern regional title at Wellington. Having been put into bat by the Devon visitors, skipper Caitlin Chesil scored a quick-fire 19 off 14 balls. The remaining batters struggled for fluency, with Eve O'Neill, 15, and Mia Clark, 11, the only others to reach double figures, as Hursley were dismissed for 72. Needing early wickets, Hursley opened the bowling with leg spinner Eve O'Neill, and she struck two early blows by dismissing Beatrix Willis and Erin Vakusic. The third wicket pair built a steady recovery, but a devastating spell by Sophie Kent, 3 for 6 in 4 overs, turned the match back in her side's favour. Opener Georgia Reed stood firm, but the other batters found scoring difficult, and Caitlin Chesil claimed the final wicket with 9 still required. The reward for winning the regional title is a trip to the national finals at Neston in Cheshire. In the semi-final, they will be pitted against Northern winners South Northumberland, while Tunbridge Wells face Porthill Park from Staffordshire. And there is a picture of a very large cricket ball nestling in the grass.
Daphne told you what's coming along at the Chesil Theatre. Well, now here's what's going to happen at the Theatre Royal. West End performers set for Theatre Royal. The UK's longest-running musical theatre concert tour heads to Theatre Royal Winchester this month. Beyond the Barricade features past principal performers from Les Miserables and delivers over 2 hours of the best Broadway and the West End. This brand new show will include many of the best numbers that have made Beyond the Barricade the most popular theatre concert in the country, including songs from The Phantom of the Opera, Jesus Christ Superstar, Chicago, The Lion King, Blood Brothers and Hamilton. The show was devised by Andy Rice and David Fawcett after they appeared in the London and Manchester productions of Les Miserables. David played the lead role of Jean Valjean, and Andy played other male characters, including Enjolras, and still remains the only person to take on the job of being the show's resident director and perform at the same time. Joining Andy and David on stage are Katie Leeming and Poppy Tierney. Katie played the lead roles of Eponine in the West End production, and was an ensemble vocalist in the film. Poppy played Cosette in the West End and on the UK tour, as well as playing lead roles in Evita, The Witches of Eastwick and Miss Saigon. Beyond the Barricade is at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Sunday, August the 29th.
Launch of book commemorating local war dead. A book which tells the stories of Winchester men who lost their lives in the Great War has been officially launched at the church where they are commemorated. We Will Remember Them, The Great War Dead of Full Flood and Weak Winchester, was unveiled at St Paul's Church, Full Flood, in front of an audience of local residents, historians and descendants of those who died. Geraldine Buchanan, one of the six co-authors of the book, presented a copy to Reverend Mary Copping, assistant priest at St. Paul's Church, in front of the Oak Memorial Board, which lists 91 men from Full Flood and Week who died in the war between 1914 and 1918. The Reverend Copping read from Lawrence Binyon's poem, For the Fallen, which includes the famous line, "We will remember them," the inspiration for the book's title. Among those present were Christine Veer and Jeff Coel, respectively niece of Leslie Jacob and great-nephew of Reginald Clark, two of the men commemorated on the memorial. They laid a poppy wreath before the sounding of the church bell signalled the start of 2 minute silence in memory of the men. The book is the culmination of 6 years' work by Mrs. Buchanan and fellow historians Derek Whitfield, Jenny Watson, Joe Coleman, Cheryl Davis and Steve Jarvis. They researched the men listed on the memorials at St. Paul's and also at St. Matthew's Church Week. As previously reported in the Chronicle, their book tells the forgotten stories of soldiers, sailors and airmen who died in theatres of war as far afield as France, Belgium, Mesopotamia, now modern Iraq, Gallipoli, East Africa and even Russia. After the launch, Derek Whitfield said, "It was highly appropriate that the launch took place in the church where the men are remembered. Winchester does not have a single memorial inscribed with all the names of the city's great war fallen. So local parish memorials, like those at St. Paul's and St. Matthew's, would have served an important purpose by providing a tangible focus for their loved ones' grief." We were delighted that Christine Veer and Jeff Coel were able to attend. Both helped enormously in our research by recounting family stories and providing photographs. At the launch, they represented a deeply poignant historical thread stretching back to the fallen. Copies of the book can be obtained from P.G. Wells Bookshop, College Street, Winchester, Sarson Press, Hyde Street, Winchester, the Royal Hampshire Regimental Museum, Southgate Street, Winchester, and the Rifles Museum, Peninsula Barracks, Winchester. Alternatively, email, and this is all one word, Great War Dead Winchester Full Flood and Week at outlook.com.
City house prices highest in the UK. Winchester has been named as the most expensive city in the UK to buy a house, a new analysis has revealed. Workers in the city need to earn 14 times the average salary in order to be able to afford a house. Research suggests the average salary in Winchester is £45,059, with the average house price sitting at £630,432. Analysis has revealed that buying a home in a UK city will typically set a buyer back by more than 8 times average earnings. The affordability of city living has worsened. In 2020, house prices in cities typically had cost around 7.5 times wages. Wages in cities are often higher than in rural areas, and during the coronavirus pandemic, many city dwellers have relocated to the countryside, helping to push up house prices there. Winchester was identified as the UK's least affordable city, replacing previous table topper Oxford. London was outside the top 5 least affordable cities for the first time in 6 years. Russell Gallery, managing director of the Halifax, said, "Affordability is significantly better in the north, and there are now just 2 cities, Plymouth and Portsmouth, with better than average affordability in the south."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you... Thank you very much. Goodbye.